What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode with the Power of a Growth Mindset. Today, we are joined by a very special educator here in our community, Miss Asia Cunningham. She is a proud native of Warsaw, North Carolina. She's also a graduate of North Carolina Central University and now serves as a principal for Pearsontown Elementary. She has spent the last 13 years of her career in education, having multiple roles, which include teaching, leading, and mentoring staff and students. Asia has won numerous awards, including North Carolina Principal Fellow, Teacher of the Year, NC Future Ready Leaders, and the Spectacular Magazine's Education Woman of the Year. She is also just an all-around boss. Asia, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm doing great. Thank you both for having me here today.
Of course.
Welcome to the show.
Well, we love to start our shows off, Asia, with a mental health check-in. We love to do this every episode just to gauge how folks are doing. If there's anything that we can help you with, maybe some of the members in our community can help you with. This is just a time to just let people know how you're doing. So we'd like to begin this off with asking you, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. God's grace is sufficient. So to be able to speak to you about my story and how I've gotten here is already a blessing in itself. I think from the community side, I would push for our citizens to check on your school leaders. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of support needed for us as educators, but us as building leaders, we're carrying a lot of weight right now in terms of safety for students, safety for kids, and keeping our communities in check right now during the pandemic. So we're doing a lot of leaning on each other to make sure that we check in, like, hey, how are you? Do you need anything? And so I would push for upper leadership to get a little bit of love as we're navigating and setting expectations for how to keep everybody safe while still making sure learning is taking place in our classrooms.
That is an awesome shout out. Actually, let's build on that for a second, because we know that the pandemic has actually disrupted a lot of things. We've seen it in healthcare. We've definitely seen it in education. So I know for us, we're curious, how has the transition been? I know when everything popped off, we saw a lot of schools go virtual. We saw a big switch in terms of how education is being run. So how have things kind of changed on your part?
Man, where do I start? My superintendent jokes with us all the time because I became a principal in the heart of COVID. So we're like COVID principals. There's not a book, not one roadmap that we were giving to prepare us for COVID inside of our schools. Mm-hmm. And so I think of it as making history. You know, as a building leader, I had an opportunity to be on the front lines for figuring out how are we going to make sure learning takes place. We keep our social and emotional learning needs of our students at the very forefront and their families, right? Because we are all in a different space when the pandemic initially hit. So you are right. A lot of us went virtual. And so then we were faced with the challenge of how do we make it equitable so that everyone can access their classrooms? And so navigating that and navigating technology disbursement so every child had a laptop just so they could go to school and be in our classrooms was one thing. Another aspect is training our teachers on how to really now customize their instruction. They're used to being in a classroom in front of students, and now they're in front of a screen, trying to keep those babies engaged on a day-to-day basis. And so a lot of learning and working together took place last year. But there were a few highlights, right? Like our parents got to see the greatness that happens for their children firsthand, right? Like being on that screen and parents being in the background of those rooms, you're able to see the educational transformation happen for children. I think another plus for that is that your students, the parents realize the needs that each individual child had uniquely. Like my child is really excelling, or maybe my baby needs some additional supports, right? Mm-hmm. And so now that we've made that transition back into schools, you can see parents more engaged with our teachers in terms of, hey, how can I help close the gap that my baby has that I watched him struggle while he was online? And so I think the virus itself has definitely put a strain on us all, but in some ways has connected us in terms of education in a way that it hadn't before. And lastly, I think just the process from moving from an assistant principalship to a principalship, right? And you're like trying to figure it all out. And what am I supposed to be doing? Am I doing it right? Mm-hmm. I'm grateful, you know, for my EK Poe family. They definitely helped me to make that transition into principalship. They were there with me, anything that they think I could grow in, anything that I could do to help change, a lot of collaboration. And I think the building leader to the teacher relationship has certainly changed. Of course, ultimately, as a leader, you're thinking the entire environment, but we were able to make a lot of things happen for kids that we looked as if it was impossible to do initially.
Yeah, I agree with you, Asia, especially coming from the educator perspective. You know, for Duplin, we had little to no resources. I think right when the pandemic hit, that's when we went one-to-one. And even when we were one-to-one, we still had to go through the process of training students on how to utilize technology, because not a lot of the kids, you would think a lot of them would have exposure to technology, but that's not always the case. And we went through that stage. But I think one thing that you said was extremely important was parents were able to see how their students, their scholars, their babies, how they were acting and like what they were struggling in. And that's how that support came in this year, which is it's powerful for me, because as a counselor now, it's just like, okay, I can't just support your child. It's the whole entire village. And that's what we need in order to bring in that support. And so I just want to say happy belated National Principals Month. And we appreciate all the hard work that principals do. And I think oftentimes there is no one there like they are for teachers, because we often hear teachers say, I don't feel supported. But then it's just like a principal, you can't really say that, because you have to support the whole entire building. And my leader, he was saying, like, being a principal, it's like a lonely place sometimes, because you have to care for so many other people. So I just want to say we appreciate what you do, mm-hmm. and for the communities that you're doing it for.
Thank you.
First off, for our audience, because I saw this in your bio, we want to highlight a few things. We saw a BS in criminal justice and corrections from North Carolina Central. We saw a master's of education from Walden University, master's of secondary school administration / principalship for K-12 from North Carolina Central. And now you're working on your PhD. So how did this all come about? Obviously, you have a very thorough background. You know, where did this love of education start? And of course, what was the cause for you to go and pursue a PhD? I'm always interested to hear from folks' perspective on that.
I'm going to start by saying I didn't choose education, right? And I'm going to go on record and say I wanted to be a U.S. Marshal, right? Ooh, like I had every idea that I was going to be a sniper and I was going to protect the president of the United States. And that's what I wanted to do.
I think that's everybody.
So then I had a dream of being an attorney and fighting for rights for people. And then the more I went through undergrad, I found myself realizing that I am a natural people person. I need to be in connection with people. And so I started exploring this role of criminal justice and public administration, and thinking through how can I become a part of the criminal justice system and help with reformation of how offenders mm-hmm. entered back into society, particularly the juvenile offender. I really have always had a love for kids and working with kids, like through church, through just being in different organizations, but I had no love for maybe teaching them. That wasn't like my thought. Mm-hmm. However, when I think about my roots, right, I can start by thinking about my grandmother, who was an educator, right? Mm-hmm. And just her day-to-day interaction and being in her classroom as a student. She was probably one of the first educators that I was introduced to. And then I think about Jenny, who's my godmother. She taught kindergarten, and I knew right away that was definitely not my area of expertise. Kindergarten, you need.
Right.
Teachers need. In kindergarten, they are a godsend, and I just believe that you have to be called to kindergarten. And so The more that I move through my criminal justice program and ideas and doing my internship and probation and parole, like I realized that side wasn't necessarily for me either. So I kind of found myself in this space of what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And so just a little bit about my background. I lost my mom at 16 years old, probably one of the most critical ages for a female. Right? Because you're learning, you're in that cycle of puberty, you're going into womanhood, and that's where your mother is there to mold you, grow you, shape you, and help you become the person you are. And I feel like my mom did that in so many ways that she didn't realize that she had that impact on me, right? Her accountability for me to go to school, her consistent push for, we're not accepting anything other than an A from you because that's what you're capable of, right? Mm-hmm. And so you think about growing up in poverty, oftentimes, you know, for the schools, we don't see the push from the parents, right? You know, you're growing up in a trailer, you got a gasoline heater, sometimes your lights turned on and sometimes they didn't, like, and so you expect those individuals to not make it out. And my mom, she pushed for that. She was always on me about education was the key to that for me. Mm-hmm. She made sure that I went to the best schools, right? That was another piece of it for her, making sure that I went to Kenansville Elementary. And then I followed up with E. Smith and then the transition to James Keenan High, which I'm a proud Tiger. But she
every
step of the way for me to succeed and be in the best clubs. And so the love for education came by way of finding success, right? Our students have to find that success in school in order to keep pushing and going through school. And so my mom passed, my brother and sister and I were kind of split up. My sister went to stay with my mother's sister and my brother and I stayed with my stepfather. And so I was right at my senior year of high school. And so I made the transition. I remember looking at college applications and thinking, where am I going to go to school? What am I going to do? You know, I didn't have the money to go to Howard, which was my dream. They gave me a partial scholarship. UNC gave me a partial. And then North Carolina Central University gave me a full ride. So I went to Central. I transferred in from Outward Bound, which was a program where you could do like early college now. So I came in with 2 years. And so again, there, Princess Rains, educator, pushed me. Catherine Brinson, they pushed me into education. Miss Dr. Felita Carr was once in talent search. And so I just think about all the things that in absence of my mother, they were strategically placed to me by God to make sure that I was successful. So once my mom passed, I left and went to Central. My father passed a semester before I graduated. So I got custody of my younger brother. And that began the wheel turning for what I was doing with juvenile justice and watching him and his success through school. It later came to pass that I got custody of my sister, right? So now I'm watching both of them struggle in school in a way I never did. Right. Because my mom was a constant push. Like she was always on me, do your homework, get this done, you know. So they miss that. Right. When you're thinking about me being at 16, my brother at the time was 10 and my sister was 12. So that push and critical years of school where they really needed her, she was absent. Right. Because she was dead. So I think watching them got me into education. I can remember leaving my job and like calling my grandmother to tell her I was gonna go be a teacher's assistant because I felt like I was watching my back. I felt like I couldn't really make a change in criminal justice. I felt like I was not being a part of the solution to how to make children make better choices to become better people. And so I remember walking into Pearsontown Elementary literally 13 years ago. And I sat down at a table in front of Thomasina LeGrand and Dr. Eric Bracey and Leroy Ray, and I interviewed to become a teacher assistant. I had no idea that from that day to this day, I would become the principal of this school. But that's just a recount of how God's work has been all over my life anyway. Your steps are ordered. I just believe that. I'm a firm believer in that. My relationship with him is a part of how and why I've gotten here. So I went there. I noticed I was put into a classroom with two teachers, and I was like, I could do this teaching thing. Like, this looks like, you know, this is easy. Let me try it. Kids love me. I was really connected with parents. Like, it just was it's a natural thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, when God is in it and it's where you're supposed to be, when you're walking in will, things just fall in order for you. And so I was like, okay, let me go back and get my teaching license. So I went back. I had my criminal justice and public administration. I did an add-on for elementary education K-6. And so started teaching. I left and went to Vance County. I left Pearson Town because Durham wasn't doing what's called lateral entry. Went to Vance. Actually, Kimberly Sims, a principal, hired me over the phone. She never physically laid eyes on me. And when I got there, she was gone. So actually introduced to Marlo Wilkins, and she was like, you're going to go places. And so she was like the next strategic placement for me of a woman, a strong Black woman, to say, there's more to you, and I'm going to push you to get that through. So I taught there for 3 years. She was on me, adamant about going back to school. You know, she was like, don't let this stop you. Don't let this be the end. And I'm like, okay. So ended up going back to Pearson Town. I taught there. And once I came, I wanted to loop. I was a looper. I kept the same group of kids, mm-hmm. and I wanted to loop with the next group to fifth grade. And at the time, we had an assistant principal named Jennifer Hauser, and the principal was Mr. Till. And they were like, no, you can't loop. And I was like, wait, what? You want me to, you're going to make me like get a new group? Like, I don't want to do that. I want to take this group to fifth grade. And then I promise I'll do whatever y'all want me to do. Mm-hmm. They're like, no, you need to come out of the classroom. And so seeing something in me that I didn't see in myself, right? Because I wasn't in a place, I'm just moving according to what I know and what God has gifted me to do. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, it's time for the next step for you. And so kind of being pushed to do something I wouldn't do otherwise. But I came out of the classroom and I was a MTSS facilitator and coach with teachers.
Ooh, God bless your heart.
Which is where my master's in teacher leadership came from, because I just fell in love with working with my colleagues and teaching them like mm-hmm. how to reach their kids and how to analyze their classroom data and track how their babies were doing. And then you do all that coaching and you realize like the principal seat controls all of the programming and structures of schools. I'm a firm believer like principals have a clear seat in what happens in our society. Mm-hmm. What you do, what you allow, the educators you select to put in front of your kids is impacting our entire lives. Everybody comes through an educator, and every educator comes through a principal strategically placing them in the building to create success for children. Mm-hmm. So I decided to apply for the North Carolina Principal Fellow Scholarship. I got the scholarship. Was one of the happiest days of my life opening that letter at the mailbox. I was like screaming. My mail lady was like, what is it? But it was an almost $70,000 scholarship to go back and get my master's in school administration. And then, I went back to where it all started, the North Carolina Central University. And so shout out to their MSA program. They definitely made sure that I was prepared with not just theory in a text, but actual application of leading in my internship. And I definitely believe that has helped me as I've navigated the seat of the principal. The more that I worked in leadership, I'm learning the various researches that were happening for our students. And so I really fell in love with the idea of going back to school to do my own research on what I was seeing inside of each learning environment that I've been in over time. And then it's hard work for me because there are not many of the girls that look like me that are in these seats that are leading school districts that are creating change. And I think it has something to do with how they're finding success inside of their classrooms. Are we being heard? Do we have people positioned to make sure that they can be seen? Mm-hmm. And so you couple that with boys of color and what we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's important for us to know that when we're in spaces of opportunity to lead, that we make sure we create processes for all students to be successful. But we really have to get our lens together on what are we doing for our students of color and how come they're not showing up in leadership spaces. So that's how I got to my doctorate.
Wow. That was a lot. And not only a lot, but it was beautifully said in a sense of, I see why you're in education now. A lot of people say what you said earlier, like I know for me, if you would have told me when I was getting suspended from high school that I was going to be a teacher and not a counselor, I would have looked at you and said, yeah, right. But you know, looking at your story, Asia, like you were impacted by some of the same people that I was impacted by, Aunt Jenny, also Miss Rains at Outward Bound, like those programs that build that bridge between that rural setting into trying to help us to get to a college, like a lot, those programs are still around. And while I'm bringing this up because I want other people to take advantage of those programs, because believe it or not, it's not just in rural counties. There are also in Wake County, Orange County, New Hanover, all surrounding counties. A lot of these community colleges have like a TRIO program housed on their campus for middle school and high school kids to take advantage of. And, you know, that's how I was able to step outside of Duplin County for the first time. You know, I'm going to Washington, D.C. I'm going to Virginia and just like those summer trips. I look forward to that. And then not only that stipend, but, you know, but it was just like different things that I look forward to that that I hope other people would take advantage of as well, because oftentimes I hear we don't have those resources, but they're there. People just don't know much about it. And so, you know, to hear that you was also inspired by something that I was inspired by is helpful, but it also gives me hope for the future, because I know, you know, in education, not many people who are like you and I, coming from these areas, Warsaw and Magnolia, are like us. And so we bring a very unique perspective to the table, which brings me to this question. You know, I know education wasn't in your direction. However, before you took over, you got custody over your brother and your sister. Was it a time where you felt like your passion or what you was working hard towards was coming to an end so that you would have the opportunity to raise them and provide for them?
Yeah, I was going to touch on that when I was speaking a few minutes ago, because I can remember like walking through that door thinking, I have lost everything, right? When you are 16, you don't have a mom, you're 19 without a father. And your family is your family. They're going to do what they can for you, mm-hmm. but no one loves you like your mom and your daddy. And I remember thinking, how am I supposed to take care of two people? Like, I had no clue on how to be a parent. Like, I had a clue on being a big sister, right? My dad drove a truck. My mother was a nurse and a cosmetologist, right? So I cooked for them when they weren't there. I did take care of some things that my mom taught me to do. But to actually full on take custody of two people that you are now responsible for, right? It was tough. I can remember before my mom passed away, like I remember sitting at a table with her. And I remember her saying to me, she was going to the hospital. And I can remember her saying, like, if I don't make it back, what will you do? And I remember looking at her and saying, I'll do whatever I can do to keep our family together at 16. And I don't even know why I said that to her, but that's what I've done. You know, every step of the way, sure, there are things that come in between that makes you feel like giving it all up. You know, like you, I was in a low space. Because I had aspired to do all these things for myself, and I found myself being the last thing on my list, right? And even up until maybe a few months ago, I can remember having a conversation with God, like, what about me? You know, you're giving and you're giving. All the kids that I've touched, all the educators that I've touched, like, what about me? And I keep getting a clear reminder from him that it's not about you. It's not about me. And every step of the way, when I look back, he's always taken care of me. I took on two people that weren't mine. I never had a light cut off. I never lost a car. I never had to worry about where I was going to lay my head at night. I never had to worry about, where was I going to have a job? How was I going to provide for myself? I never had to worry about, okay, school, I want to go back. How does that work? Every step of the way, he's provided for me. So when I got the announcement that I was going to go back to be the principal of the school where my education career started, when I was walking through the door that morning to go see the staff, I had to like pause because it was like so loud. Like, if you move over, I can take care of it.
Yes.
Ooh. And I just feel like so often we stand in the way of what we're called to do because of what we are like envisioning in our head. Like, I want to do this. I want to do this. My ambitions sometimes get crazy, right? Mm. And so I feel like we have to not be afraid to step aside so that the work that he's ordained us to do can be done. Less, more of him and less of you is in that work. And so I feel like, yeah, there are times that I feel like I've lost control, right? Because that's what it's about. And I'm like, I'm not in control of this. And he reminds you, yeah, you're not. Mm. Have five seats. but when you're in that space, you got to look to the people in the network that he has strategically placed around you.
Yep.
Right, that you can lean on and say, hey, I'm low today. I got a sister circle that if it wasn't for them, I don't even know where I would be. You know, like they pray with me. They're talking to me at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning on the phone. And so you got to have that tight niche, you know. Mm-hmm. My family, I have my family members that I call and I can talk to them and tell them if I need something and they're there. So you got to, when you find yourself in that dark space, because it's easy to go there, right? It's easy to go there, you know, when you think about all the time that you've spent doing so much for other people. And you're feeling sometimes like you don't really have a lot to show for yourself. But those people are there for a reason. They help remind you that you deserve all the things that you're getting, and that they're there to support you.
That's true. So Asia, you know, within your leadership role, how do you give back to yourself? How do you refill your cup? Because, you know, oftentimes people say you can't pour from an empty cup, but sometimes as school administrators, you may not be able to take that day off, or I'm not for sure what it looks like in the district that you work in. But when I hear my county, it's just like, you may not be able to take a day off, because if you take that day off, it's going to be more work on you whenever you get back. And that's okay, because it will get done. But how do you refill your cup?
First, my cup with God, right? I have to have that spiritual, be it Sunday worship, Wednesday worship. I have to keep my spiritual tank filled. Mm-hmm. That helps me. That's my coat of armor for day-to-day interactions. I'm tuned into massages. Like, I get a massage every month, right? I'm going to get my hair and nails and feet done. It's a non-negotiable. I think spending time with my friends, you know, being able to sit at a table with my mentors, Star Sampson, Greta Dula, Erica DeBose, Chantel Lightfoot, like being able to be in the room with power of women who know the struggle of work-life integration, right? It is a struggle to be an African-American female leader and do it well. Sometimes we don't have the option to take a break, because me taking a break looks like I'm slacking, right? Mm-hmm. And so you want to keep in the forefront of, this is a work is a priority for me. Being successful in my career is a priority, but you got to weave in that integration, because you do burn out. You do. If nothing else, I learned during COVID, I am not a superwoman. I'm good, but sometimes even we have to step back and away from it and say, it'll be there tomorrow. I've got to clear my head.
Right.
You know,
that's so important.
We're human. We're losing family members. You know, I buried a family member today. Like, we're losing just sleep, all the things that people are experiencing as it relates to COVID, missing socialization out and about. Those things are very real for us. And so I feel like you have to step back, and I've gotten myself to a space where I'm like, okay, I got to step back, right? And building a team around you so that you can step back, right? So it doesn't feel, you don't feel that pressure of if I walk away, then everything's going to fall apart. You know what I mean? You got to have people that you can look at and say, hey, I'm getting ready to step off for a second. I just need you to hold it together so it doesn't blow up and I'll be back. You know what I mean? Like, so adding in those one week a year vacations where you actually turn off your email and turn off cell phone communications, that's a necessity for me.
Yes.
I'd love to get a little more physically active. If I could figure out how to weave that in, I might be all right.
Hey, it's something you can do. It starts with that mindset. You have to prepare your mind for it. Right. And that's for me. That's what I had to do. I had to prepare my mind for it. And then also then start small and then work my way up. I think I was going like maybe one day a week. And then that's when I pushed it to two, then three. And then I'm working on four because, you know, I come up with a schedule and I try my best to stick with that schedule, but that's sometimes that schedule, that to-do list don't get hit at all. Yep. So, but one thing I am learning is, and Gany get on me about this all the time is, you know, practicing self-care, carrying the weight of other people, especially in the role as a counselor, you know, carrying the weight of other people can break you down if you don't find a way to be able to decompress and find outlets and find strategies that's going to help you. So I don't mind taking a day. Like, if I already got it planned, the Duplin County do not issue us a wellness day this month, I'm taking my wellness day or two or three. Yep. Because, you know, these are times where we can't just act like we in normalcy, because this is not normal. And the more that we try to make it to be normal, the worse things get. And so, you know, taking care of yourself is real. It's important. And I'm inspired by your story, but most importantly, what you're doing as a Black woman in education. And oftentimes that what I've seen so far, Black women are not appreciated within the educational spaces.
Yeah, and I guess it just depends on where you are.
Right? That is true. That is so true.
Some spaces we get the supports that we need, and some spaces we have to advocate for the support to ensure you have it. And I think that varies from environment to environment that you lead. So I definitely know that being at the table as a principal, it's a different ballgame. I'm lucky. I'm fortunate that in Durham, there are so many of us seated at the table to be voices for children of color. And I'm honored to serve next to my colleagues that have watched me kind of come through the ranks. They've been there to support me every step of the way. So it just depends on where you are and how you are able to network that system. But I'm a proud educator in Durham Public Schools, and I feel like I'm supported by my board, I'm supported by my superintendent's office, and I feel like if you're looking for a great place to call home, come to Durham Public Schools. That's just my plug.
Putting a little plug in there. Come on over this way. Right. I got you. You spoke a lot about mentors and people who really played a pivotal role in just your development, as well as even in your current role. And for our listeners, I would love to get your perspective on how important these mentors have been and continue to be, especially now that you are a principal. I know that there's a lot that comes with that leadership role. So how pivotal have these mentors been for you as you just continue to rise and make change at all levels that you touch?
Yeah. So I think, as I mentioned initially, mentorship, like the first women that got me into education, right, being my foundation. And I think about transitioning into the teacher role. I think about my mentor, Roxy Evans, who taught me how to teach a kid how to read, right? Because we all want to teach. Like, it looks good. It looks fun. You see, you're in a classroom where you're thinking all the things are happening and you know, but you have to be in a space of learning. Right? Every position I've been in, I think I've always found myself as the student. Like, I'm here to get every amount of knowledge you have as my mentor so that I can kill the game at whatever I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she was so patient and so caring and nurturing and motherly to me to make sure that I understood what gift I was being given to actually teach children to read and to correct errors in their educational foundation so they can be successful graduates mm-hmm. of high school. And then I think about once I became a teacher and navigating that, being placed in the arms of Greta Dula, right? Like she was my mentor for becoming a school administrator, her. And she came by way of Andrea Carroll, right? She introduced me, one mentor introduced me to another mentor. And I feel like it was important for me as a little brown girl to see another brown girl doing it and doing it well. Yep. And so choosing where I was going to do my internship was strategic, right? Because again, principals put in front of their students representations of them, right? And so I needed a leader who represented me and could help me understand the best ways to do it. And so gifted that opportunity with her, Mr. Teal, serving under his leadership as a teacher, right? Because I think just as important as men and women. And then you have your people that don't look like you, right? That push you, that challenge you, Jennifer Hauser, Andrea Daniels, Darlene Ryan, like these, there are women that don't look like you, but they understand your struggle and they're there to help you navigate it as well. Dr. Stacey Stewart was my most recent supervisor. And I will say there was a level of push that she gave that was nurturing and gentle enough, but reminded me to keep my eyes open for the whole picture, right? And so I believe that every step of the way, if you don't have a mentor or someone that's not afraid to give you constructive criticism and be honest with you, right? You're gonna become complacent and you're not learning. And when you're not learning, you're not creating change. And that's where I always wanna be on the forefront of creating change to make it happen for kids. So mentors are critical. And I just pray that I am a mentor to the students and teachers that I touch in a way that every person that has been the foundation of my career is to me. So that's my give back in terms of mentorship.
That's you. You were right on with that. And you actually made a good point, because I was explaining this to a colleague of mine where, you know, I've been in spaces, at least with my career the last few years, I've been in tech and done a lot of stuff with data. And I tell people all the time, it's not a space where you see a lot of Black and brown people in that environment. And so when you go in for interviews or you go and want to make a pitch for leadership, it's important that you see people that look like you. So that way, when you've got the next generation or that next person that comes in, they're like, hey, you know what? I really think I can be successful here. And so to your point, when you were saying like, hey, you as a leader, you're trying to create that, you know, whoever is listening to this, I was just inspired by what you were saying, because this is something that I know I'm doing. I know Mike is actively doing it, and just creating a space where we do see more Black leaders, more Black folks in education, more Black folks in tech, to really make that change for the next group coming in.
Yeah. And I think creating the space so that my counterparts, right, feel the need for it, right? Because mm-hmm. it's not to say you're leaving someone out, it's to say that there needs to be more of it so that we can keep moving forward in the conversations of equity that have to happen inside of our schools.
Ooh, yes.
In order for children of color to find success, they have to see it. They have to see people that look like them doing it. I cannot tell y'all how many times, even just at my new school in the past couple of weeks, like I'm walking around talking to people and they're like, what do you do here? The kids, right? Like, what do you do here? And I'm like, oh, I'm the principal. And they're like, I mean, like face all like crazy, like you're a principal. Like I thought you was the assistant principal. You know what I mean? Like even their mindset, right, is to believe. And they have said to me, well, I thought the principal was white, right? Like, and it's like their mindset around representation in the environment. Like they're not seeing themselves in those spaces, you know? And so it's hard for them to connect that you belong at the table. Right. And it's okay for us to create space for you to find success so that you can sit at whatever table it is. You want to be a doctor, you want to do lawyer, you want to be owner of a franchise, you want to be a gamifier, like whatever it is that you decide you want to do, we want to make sure that we're examples of how you do it well.
Yeah, Asia, that's real and very spot on, because you know, oftentimes I always preach like kids can't be what they don't see, and that's why they come up with the mindset, I want to be that ball player, I want to be that I want to be that rapper, or I want to be, I don't know what I want to be. And I'm like, that's okay too, because by the time you leave my presence or this school, I want to help you to understand that you can be anything that you want to be, but you have to put in some work to get there. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's very important, especially equity is very important, especially within education, because you know, sometimes the people who can drive what equity looks like are the gatekeepers, and it goes back to that principle. Sometimes that's the reflection of who's in the building. And so I wonder, you know, what are some of the things that you're doing in your school to promote equity and to eliminate inequity in your school building?
I think one of the first things I want to clarify is most of the time when we say the word equity, people automatically revert to race, right? Yep. Right. We forget about gender. We forget about sexuality. We forget about religion. We forget about male, you know, gender, like male versus female. We forget about all the other entities. We solely jump in on race, right? And so one of the things that I first want to say is if your school is a diverse learning environment, then the staffing that you put in that environment should also be diverse, right? How those kids are able to find someone in that building that looks like them is critical to the success of all students, right? Not just because Black kids need to see Black kids, but white kids need an opportunity to be led and taught by African-American teachers as well, right? So that they get a cultural relational piece that they're missing in learning how to navigate with their peers. And so it has to work together. There should be a balance of male and female in the environment, right? Sitting at the table as a female teacher with a male teacher, you're going to get some different perspectives, right? On how to handle things and how the mathematical parts of the brain thinks for the woman versus the man, and so many different things, right? And then you think about sexuality, like when you're coming through schools where kids are battling with their own sexuality and their gender, like having someone at the table that can speak and understand that for children and being a voice in the room is important. And so for me, I will say, of course, I'm only 3 weeks into my new place, but my old place, the first priority that I had was to make sure my staff representation was just as diverse as the student population. It has to be. And then you create spaces where people can have the conversation, right? It's no right or wrong way, but we need to be able to talk about what are the issues that lie in our data. Right. When you're thinking about our schools of color, where white subgroups are coming in, Asian subgroups, and they're still exceeding those subgroups, but the predominant environment are students of color. We have to really think about how do the exposures impact the success of our students. And so there's that. I feel like our females in general, they're not showing up in math spaces, white, Black, Asian, Indian. When it comes to math and science, STEM, why aren't girls at the table? Right? Like reading novels, we're leading in that area, but we have to figure out how to get girls loving math and discussing math. Like how are our teachers that look like them? Are they having conversations with them about their success in math and celebrating the small successes that they see? Then we think about avenues into gifted programs, right? Like what students are nurtured and what students actually receive the label of giftedness, right? Because my belief is that every child has giftedness. It just ranges, right? Well, it depends on at which point you're able to display that. But I believe every child has a giftedness. And flexibly grouping their giftedness allows all kids to showcase who they are.
Right.
But I also think the non-academic engagement, right? Because there are some kids that math and reading is, school isn't always for every single kid. And we got to find out how to weave in those arts into their learning so that it's made relevant for them at school. And so making sure the opportunities to offer specials and non-academic is rich and it's engaging for those kids is another piece that I focus on as a leader. And then lastly, I got to say, a lot of my work too is with the parents. Getting them, because our babies, our kids are resilient. They're going to do what we teach them, right? And if we think about our first opportunities to think about when we were when we weren't treated fairly, right? How was that response given to that kid to help them understand what was happening and why it was happening? And having our parents at the table, I think, can help that. So a lot of my present work is around getting the parents to the table to have conversations about, hey, we need to talk about diversity and what we're doing for our kids and what does learning look like and what resources were made available in our community for you before you even went to kindergarten. You don't have the money to pay for someone to go to a private school, but what resources were there? And so how do we get them connected there? How do we get them connected with schools that are magnet versus their traditional base school? Do they even know the process to make that happen?
And Asia, thank you so much for highlighting that point about the diversity aspect of equity, because, you know, sometimes, like you said, we result immediately to race, and it's not all about race. And I was thinking about when I became a counselor and I had a student issue, and it talks about sexuality, and it was just like, ooh, I remember this in like grad school, and I remember having to do like ethics around that. How do you advocate when no one else in the building knows much about that particular topic? And that's very much important. I know in any environment, honestly, because this happens in the workplace. If you're in corporate America, this happens if you're in a nonprofit sector or anywhere. So thank you so much for highlighting that.
Yeah. And I think too, to think about the diversity in our English as a second language learners, you know, both adult and student, like how do they fit into where we are? And how are we making sure they feel accepted in, even though there's a language barrier, right? Mm. You know, you think about EC students, exceptional children, they can't advocate for themselves always. Mm. Or is there a representation in their classroom that speaks to the heart of the work that it takes to deal with students of special needs? Mm. You know, my brother was in a special education, and it was a fight as a parent, you know, like being the advocate for him and making sure that he got everything that he deserved as a student beyond his label. And so that's another aspect of equity that I just think we sometimes forget.
That's real. As a follow-up to what you were just speaking of, in terms with your current position as a principal, right? You know, we know that curriculums kind of change each and every year. But in the last, I would say the last year and a half to 2 years, especially when we saw a lot of stuff being pushed in terms of equality across all groups. How, as a principal, how are you going about pushing a lot of the stuff that we just previously discussed in the upcoming curriculums? And really, when you start thinking about, you know, the next year, the next 3 to 5 years, like, do you see that the curriculums are going to continue to build a lot of the equality and a lot of the changes that we want to see within our kids' education?
Yeah, I think because our district has adopted curriculum, right? Mm-hmm. So prior to this moment, we didn't have standardized curriculum at every single school, right? So like right now we're operating with a math curriculum that's the same no matter what school you land in, and we're following a pacing together, okay. Right? That level of commitment to that curriculum make sure that if you leave my school and you go next door to another school, we are in the same space, right? So that's an opportunity gap that we have slowly been able to close just by taking the risk of investing in the same exact curriculum for all schools. And then I think, You're coupling that with now there's more partnership across our schools and discussion between school leaders about what are we doing as we implement the curriculum. You know, COVID was interesting because we adopted new curriculums, but as the teachers are learning the curriculum, they're trying to scale what normally they would teach in an hour and 50 minutes into 45 minute sessions, right? So the more comfortable our teachers are with the content they are able to deliver, then the better off our students can be prepared. So I think having that curriculum gives the teachers a starting point, right? They're teaching their North Carolina State standards, but they needed a space where they didn't have to go hunt for resources from all these different websites. Right. Then now the curriculum is right in their hand. They may have more than what they need so they can tailor it, or they may not have enough and they can say, hey, let's work and add this to it. But at least there's a baseline where we are all working together to ensure our kids get what they need. I don't see our state standards making any major adjustments right now, but I do think they're refining as we research and we assess like the implementation of our curriculums. Are they really meeting the needs of our kids? And are we seeing the growth that our kids need? I'm a firm believer that any curriculum that you implement is gonna take a few years to actually see the results. So for example, if you start the curriculum at third grade and then you move it up every year, you're not gonna see the effects of it until it's had its opportunity to do a full cycle, right? So that the kids' processes for thinking are in alignment with the teaching practices that come with that curriculum.
Hey, I have a question, follow-up question with that. Oftentimes you see on social media, people say they need to begin to teach personal finance and life skill classes that's gonna help young scholars be successful whenever they graduate high school. How much of what is taught in the classroom can be, I'm not going to say control, but parents and community members have influence over?
I would say parents and community members have a lot of influence, right?
Talk to us.
But at the end of the day, they elect the board, right? Your citizenship decides who sits on the school board, right? You're voting, and you're voting for people that you believe are going to make the best choices for our kids. And so I believe there's a high level of influence when we actually really talk about the systemic structure of school. Mm-hmm. I think there's another influence that parents are going to have when you partner them with the school. So we're not working against each other, but together. As a classroom teacher, I'm a firm believer. I handed out life skills in Hollywood all the time. And any student that I ever taught can tell you, it is so, yes, the content is what you need, the grade level exposure to what I'm supposed to teach. But if I wrote you a paycheck at the end of every week based on your ability to do your academics and do your social and emotional needs, and you knew your check was coming and you were going to spend it on something, I'm giving you a life skill, right? And so I believe if we're not in a space where our curriculums explicitly teach it, there are ways to embed that in the day-to-day practices for kids. I think we just have to be creative about how we make that happen.
Agree. 100%. 100% agree. And I encourage, even here, I encourage parents and community members to get involved whenever they have board meetings, get involved and ask questions. And if you don't know how to ask questions, consult with somebody who you believe or you feel like will lead you to the right direction to be able to ask questions and to get an answer. Because sometimes they're like, y'all need to do this. But if they only knew the power that they had, and how they can utilize that power to help make change as well is so important, so important. Which leads me to asking, you know, with everything that's going on, we're back in the school buildings, you're in a new school, and you hear a lot of teachers and you see on the news that a lot of teachers are resigning, a lot of educators are leaving the profession for a lot of reasons. Some of those reasons we can't control, some of those reasons we cannot. However, what is your plan and or what are you doing to prevent educators burnout, even down to your bus drivers, your custodial staff, your educators. What are you doing and what is your plan for the upcoming future to prevent educators burnout?
That's a very delicate area, right? Because I go back to my mindset of being a teacher. Mm-hmm. When you're in the game to do it for kids, you commit on a different level. And as we talked about earlier, you got to have that delicate balance of, I also have a family and I have things that I need to do to take care of me so that I can be whole when I'm in that classroom. And so for my teachers, I show up for them by making sure that there's enough space for them to be whole, right? I know that you are at the school building. I'm there at 7 and I leave at 7 and I saw you there too, right? So when you're saying to me, hey, this is happening with my mom, or hey, my dad's in the hospital, like my reaction and response to you helps to make sure you can stay whole. Does that mean you need that mental health day because you're struggling? Absolutely. Because I know you're going to go 100% for these kids on Monday when you get back, right? It may look like getting all of our community partners involved to give items to them, right? Because they need to feel loved and appreciated. No, we don't have the financial means to give them a raise, right, as a principal, but we do have the voice and the advocacy that will allow us to find means and resources for them to feel appreciated and valued. I think it's important, as much as we look for counseling support for our students, that we also make sure that we are counselors as leaders to our teachers, right? So when you're coming to talk to me about a problem that you have, I'm able to take off my supervisor hat and put on a hat of teaching with you so that I'm able to problem solve and think through possible solutions to the feeling that you may be having. The student that you can't deal with, you might need to just sit with me and us think through some ideas and try some things together. I think clear structure and processes help teachers not to burn out as well. Like, teachers right now are feeling anxious day to day, knowing it could all be different. If COVID's in my classroom, what's going to happen, right? Like, they need clear understandings of, if you get COVID, what your next steps are, like, and that decreases the level of anxiety and frustrations that build for them. And so as a leader, I'm a listener, and I just feel like I push my teachers because I like excellence without excuses, but they know I have their back. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's really impactful. And maybe we want to come over there. Hey, but yeah, so Asia, you know, thank you so much for being a part of our show today. We really do appreciate you carving out the time, especially with having death in your family and being able to be in community with us and just sharing your story, but inspiring me and Gandhi to continue to push the needle in many ways than one. So, you know, as we come to a close, are there any final advice that you would like to share? You know, how can others in like corporate America, nonprofit organizations, for-profit organizations, how can the community in the world continue to make education better?
I think it's important for us all to remember that we all came through this system. I don't care what you're doing. At some point, you came through a school. And I think it's important for us to be fair to each other and have conversations about what that experience was like. And without judgment, right, without being disagreeable, for what you saw, but to hear each other's perspective. I feel like until we get to a space where everybody wants to have the conversation about what we deal with on day to day as it relates to education, we're going to continue to cycle. And so in order for us to get on the front lines of it, we have to act and we have to do it together. Mm. If you take the pandemic right now, this was a thing. It was a problem. And everyone in America worked together to figure out how to live through this problem. Sure, we lost some people, but we now know, hey, wear your mask. That's how you help and fight the coronavirus. Use your sanitizer. That's how you show your support and fight. Hey, get a vaccination. That's your support. That's your fight. Hey, get tested if you're not going to get the vaccination so that all of us can stay safe. We mend together to do the thing that we need for life to continue for a pandemic. So let's take that same approach and flip it to how we can change education and where we really need to go. We all have a part in it, but we all got to be willing to discuss what the issue is, own where we are in the issue, and push together forward. I think our principal colleagues, we see it on a different scale as we're navigating the entire community of the school. And I feel like some of us are really good at having those open conversations and helping people to see the view without being threatening. And I think that's where the conversations are often shut down because it becomes disagreeable. It becomes argumentative versus I'm just giving a perspective of what I'm seeing it through. And I want you to see it through me. And I want to see it through you so that we can do what's best for the kids. Open yourself up to remember to be a learner. That's my advice is that I'm a learner. I wake up, we all put our pants on, one leg in, one leg on one side, one leg on the other side, right? That's how you wear pants. So we're all equal in that regard. And so I think it's important for us to remember that you have a title because you're gifted with it and whatever you've done to get that title, but it doesn't make you better. And so we got to not be afraid of each other so that we can move forward together.
Ooh, moving forward together. That's what it's all about. And so, Asia, I know you're an educator and a school principal. So how can people find you or get in contact with you if they would like to follow up about how to support communities or even support your school? Do you mind sharing any information with us?
Absolutely. I can be reached. I'm at Durham Public Schools. So Asia_Cunningham@dpsnc.net. My personal email, you can reach me at asiacunningham@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, Asia Cunningham. So feel free to reach out. I'd love for you guys to support Pearson Town Elementary School in any way possible. You can check out our website and make direct donations to our school. And so, yeah, give a reach there.
Well, Asia, we greatly appreciate you coming in and speaking with us today. You know, I think you really said it best. It's going to take a group effort as we continue to make change in education, as we continue to make change in our communities. But again, we appreciate you taking the time. I know our audience is going to greatly benefit from all the gems that you dropped throughout this episode. But as we always say with our audience, it is the power of a growth mindset. It always starts with you.